Welcome to Food for Thought. My name is Colleen Patrick-Goudreau. I'm an author and educator dedicated to empowering people to make informed food choices, to debunking myths about veganism, to being a voice for animals, and to giving people the tools and resources they need to live according to their own values of compassion and wellness. I'm the author of The Joy of Vegan Baking, The Vegan Table, Color Me Vegan, Vegan's Daily Companion, and the 30-Day Vegan Challenge. You can learn more about who I am and what I do by visiting my website, compassionatecook.com. You can also visit 30dayveganchallenge.com because the online program is here. It's live. I am so thrilled. This has literally been a project I conceived 6 years ago, and I am so thrilled to announce that it's live. In short, you can start anytime you like, whenever you're ready, whenever you want to start. As soon as you sign up, you start getting the emails right away, anytime. We're talking about $20 for 30 days. It's actually 32 days technically because you get a welcome email before you get started and you get a wrap-up email after you're finished. So once you sign up, the journey begins. You get the welcome email, then you get an email each day with audio messages from me, video messages from me, written messages from me on whatever the topic is that day. For example, one day is getting to know the grocery store and there's a video of me in the grocery store giving you a tour so you know where to go and to find what you're looking for. Another day is reading labels and it too has a video message from me. One day is stocking a healthful vegan kitchen and there's a video of me showing you what a vegan kitchen looks like from the fridge to the freezer to the cupboards and the pantry. Another day is eating healthfully affordably and it's an audio message from me. You can see all the lists of topics. You can watch a teaser video. You can read frequently asked questions. You can read Brenda Davis's beautiful endorsement of the program. You can sign up all at 30dayveganchallenge.com. Yes, even if you're vegan already, you will get a lot out of this program. I promise you, I've been getting so many wonderful emails already from people who are doing it, and it's only been live for a week at this point when I'm recording this podcast. And dedicated podcast listeners will hear some of the information you've already heard on this podcast in that program, but it's all condensed to be this 30 days of, you know, basically changing behavior, changing thoughts, and it's all condensed into this one 30-day program. So I'm super excited about it. And I know once you check it out, even if you're already vegan, and again, I think you'll get something out of it, even if you are vegan already, that you'll be interested in gifting it to people around you. So 30dayveganchallenge.com. And I'm really grateful that it's finally up and running. As always, thank you to everyone who supports this podcast. We have some new silver members. Thank you to all of the silver members. We have new gold and platinum members. Thank you to the gold members first, Despina Handolius, Ann Dodson, Casey Quelzo, Jesse Liang, Penelope Lowe, Kathleen Estes, Carlos Garcia, Suzanne Kay, and Trisha Rollig. Forgive me if I have butchered any of your names. That was not my intention. The newest platinum members are Peter and Eric of Peace Food Cafe in New York City. I know you've heard me talk about Peace Food before, as Eric and Peter have sponsored in the past. And Peace Food really is my favorite New York City restaurant for so many reasons. I wrote about Peace Food Cafe recently on a blog post called Peace in New York City or Peace in NYC. You can find it on my website, compassionatecook.com. You can find it under Food for Thought blog. In short, Peace Food Cafe is amazing. It's on the Upper West Side and it's run by two of the largest hearted people I have ever met. I am so blessed to know such amazing people and to witness the most beautiful transformations. And I talk a little bit about Eric and Peter's transformation on that blog post, but also in a past podcast episode. Peace Food Cafe is opening a second location and Peter is leaving his job of 15 years to dedicate his time to the existing location so Eric can focus on opening the new one. Now I just have to wait for them to open Peace Food Cafe in the San Francisco Bay Area. It would literally be my home away from home if they did that. And if I lived in New York City, it would be my home away from home. The food is quite literally food you would make at home, or at least food you'd find in my home. It's delicious. It's an experience going there because you can just feel the love and the compassion and the consciousness that went behind creating this space and this food. So check out peacefoodcafe.com. And thank you so much, Peter and Eric, for being who you are and sharing it so beautifully with the world. Thank you also to our existing Platinum members, Anonymous in Norway, Tim Anderson, Grace Rodriguez, David Cabrera, and Alexander Gray, who are Platinum members, and also Alexander Gray Associates, who is also in the Platinum category. And you can learn more about Alexander Gray Associates, an art gallery in New York City, which is also expanding, and it was very exciting. And you can learn more at alexandergray.com. Gray, G-R-A-Y, not G-R-E-Y. I wanted to read just a letter or two because I want you to get a sense of the transformations that are taking place through through this work, through this podcast, from Despina, who's the new Gold member. Despina wrote, this is an excerpt from her email. Dear Colleen, after discovering your site and podcast, I have found you to be a great comfort, and as many people have already written, a friend and a much needed one at that. Your podcasts have provided me with great solace in this sometimes lonely journey. I have been lucky enough to have one friend, however, with whom I have shared this, and we have started our own ethical eating blog. It's ethicaleating.posterous.com. It's P-O-S-T-E-R-O-U-S, ethicaleating.posterous.com, in order to channel our anger, grief, and frustration into more purposeful ways. In it, we share cruelty-free products and recipes, which we try and test ourselves, and we share facts and knowledge on animal agriculture and cruel farming practices in Australia, in the hope that we can inform and empower others to look closely and reevaluate their choices. I came across your site and podcast just over 2 months ago, and I'm very thankful that I did. Not only do you speak with compassion, eloquence, and wisdom, thank you, you have taught me how to deal with situations where instead of being frustrated and intolerant of ignorance, I've taken your approach and used many of your purposeful and truthful phrases to plant seeds of change. As a health professional, I really should know that this is the best way to engage with humans, but during many of the months that followed my awakening, all I felt was anger and disgust. I suppose I was grieving and frustrated and angry at myself for my ignorance, and all I wanted to do was make people wake up by sharing my newfound knowledge. I could not understand how they could not be as outraged as I was by the daily atrocities that face non-human animals. But as you know, people need to come around in their own time. I needed to remember that I too was disassociated and ignorant not too long ago and for way too long. I have been moved significantly by a number of your podcasts, and I am now focusing on channeling my efforts into our blog and into cooking. I've always loved preparing, creating, and styling food, and the world of plants has opened up so many colorful options for us. It would appear that previously I was blind. Initially, it was hard for my husband, who was stunned by my reaction, but with time, he's realized that our choices have not only opened our minds to new culinary experiences, but we know now that spiritually and morally, we could not live any differently. I'm also starting to focus on educating patients about the benefits of a plant-based diet with respect to cancer prevention, longevity, and health during and after cancer treatment. I feel that I am in a unique position to do this, and I can't tell you how obvious it is to me now. Like you have said, in order to make a difference, you need to do something different. Thank you again, Colleen, and I apologize for the lengthy email, but it has given me the opportunity to express my thoughts and appreciation in writing. I do hope that someday our paths will cross. In the meantime, I will happily sponsor your podcast so that I may be able to help you continue to do the kind and invaluable work that you do. Best wishes, Despina. Thank you, Despina. I loved your email, all of it. I'm incredibly grateful and humbled by all of your support from all of you, including all of the Silver members, everyone who listens and spreads the compassionate word. So thank you, everybody. As I've threatened in the past, the podcast is top priority for me, and I really am thrilled to say that I've established the working list of episodes that I will be working on. Some of these are just working titles, and some may get bumped for something else, but this is at least the list of upcoming episodes that I have for right now. Dealing with hostile responses as a new vegan, that's come up a lot. And one that's come up a lot, and Despina touched on it, I don't know that I've covered it adequately enough since I still continue to get questions about it, is really how to deal with that initial anger you feel when you first find out what happens to the animals. I think that's something we all experience, and I think I need to do an episode that's on that specifically. So that will be one. One question that comes up, and I'm going to tell some stories about this, which is an interesting word to use around veganism, but exploring the idea that vegans discriminate against non-vegans. I've heard this word used before, and I want to touch on that. I've got some interesting stories to tell, I think, about that. I need to do my memorial to Schuster. I'll do an episode on the problem with zoos. I'll do another episode of love letters, continued stories of transformation, more stories of transformation. I plan on doing an episode on capital punishment and quote unquote humane slaughter and kind of the parallels between the two. One on the pain fish feel, one on the cruelty of circuses, one on the politics of barbed wire fencing, which may not sound exciting to you, but it's actually really interesting and fascinating. And you'll just have to wait for that episode. One about ducks that the working title is Daffy for Ducks, the magic of mushrooms, the masculinity of animal-based meat. So all of the stuff around male masculinity and eating animals. Animal slaughter as a hobby, the unsustainability of fish consumption, religion and animals, ritual slaughter, the emotional world of fish. Some of these might be brought into one episode, and animal extinction. So those are just some of the episodes we have coming up, and I am 100% dedicated to this podcast. So I'm really excited to get back into a cycle of getting one episode out after another. It requires a lot of time and research and resources, but I have your support, so I know I can do it. But let's get on with today's topic, which is disagreement is not disrespect. Let me know if you've heard this before, at least a variation of it. You're vegan. I'm not. I respect your desire to not eat animals. You should respect my desire to eat them. I'm respecting you. You should respect me. Or eating animals is a personal preference. I respect your preference not to eat animals, just like you should respect my desire to eat them, kind of a variation on the first one. Or what people eat is a personal choice. It shouldn't matter to anyone what someone else chooses to eat or not eat, as long as it isn't personally imposing upon another. It's a matter of choice. Well, this is a topic I've been thinking about for a long time. And it might seem surprising that I haven't covered it yet in all the years I've been doing this podcast. I think it's an incredibly important topic. And from the number of people I hear from who struggle with this, how to respond to this, I think it's clear that it's pretty universal. Now, I shouldn't say that I haven't addressed this topic. I think I've talked about it a lot in different podcast episodes and in my talks and in my books, this idea of being the vegan in the room. This is what I call the phenomenon of being the vegan in the room. The idea of how we hold up a mirror to one another, reflecting back to each other something we may need to look at. When you declare you're vegan, you're saying so much more than I eat broccoli. You are a physical manifestation of what it looks like to truly manifest your deepest values in your daily choices. And that can scare a lot of people because I don't think we're accustomed to meeting people who actually manifest what they say they care about. So I think I have talked about this a lot in various contexts and modes of delivery, this idea of being the vegan in the room and the idea of speaking your truth and all of that. I've also covered the personal preference response in various places, including in a podcast episode called Response to Eating Meat is My Personal Preference. And since I respect your choice not to eat meat, I would appreciate your respecting my choice to eat it. So in short, in that podcast episode, I define personal preference as the personal choice to do my hair a certain way, or to paint my walls a certain color, or to read a particular book, or buy a particular type of artwork. These are personal preferences, and they shouldn't be infringed upon. Because nobody has the right to tell me how to do my hair or what color to paint my walls or what kinds of books I should read or what kind of art I should buy. So you see, when it comes to these preferences, these personal preferences, no one is harmed. Once someone is harmed, once someone else is involved, it's no longer personal. So that's what I said there in that episode, and I believe there's a variation of it in my book, Vegan's Daily Companion. It's like if someone were to say, well, it's my personal preference to drink alcohol. Yes, that is absolutely true. It is your personal preference to drink alcohol, and no one should really tell you that you shouldn't. But I have a problem with, it's my personal choice to drink and drive, say. Now you might say, well, we all have the choice to do anything we want, and that's true, but that doesn't mean there aren't consequences. It doesn't mean it's legal to do everything we want, and it doesn't mean it's okay. Ultimately, we don't just get to run roughshod over other beings just because we think we have the right to. Your right to throw your fist ends at my nose. So just as there's potential harm when you drink and drive, innocent victims who would suffer because of your desire to do whatever you want or what you think you have a right to, there's more than potential harm when we decide that we want to eat animals. There's a definite, inevitable harm to the animals whose bodies we use and abuse and take the life out of and then mutilate for our own consumption. So just because because we've developed a desire to eat them, it doesn't mean we're exonerated because we say, that's our personal choice. That's our personal preference to do whatever we want. Once there's harm, once there's a victim, it's not personal anymore. You want to hurt yourself? That's your own prerogative. But once someone else is involved, it goes beyond the personal. So that's just my opinion about the whole idea that eating animals is a personal choice. What I want to focus on today, however, is the other idea that's in those statements, the idea of respect, that vegans should respect that people eat animals. And I find this very interesting, and I've spent a lot of time exploring what this means, and I've come to the conclusion that when people say they want me to respect the fact that they eat animals, I think what they really mean is they want me to agree that it's okay that they eat animals. In other words, I think the word respect is being misused in this context. I think what they really want is approval. I think what they really want is my blessing. Now, I'll tell you a little story from my own experience that illustrates this. I became friends with a woman many years ago, probably 10 years ago now, through my advocacy. Let's call her Penelope. She introduced herself to me when I was tabling with my vegan and animal rights literature about 10 years ago, and she came over to thank me for what I was doing. She had been vegetarian half her life for ethical reasons, and she appreciated what I was doing to bring awareness of compassion into the community that she and I were both a part of at the time. So long story short, we became friends and she signed up for a workshop I was running at the time. It was basically a 6-week workshop that met once a week in my home and guided people toward becoming vegan, answering their questions, providing information about nutrition and food and cooking and ethics. Pretty much a small in-person version of the 30-day vegan challenge. I've literally been testing this for years. I mean, this was 10 years ago. Now she brought a good friend of hers along with her who wasn't even vegetarian at the time. And by the end of the 6 weeks, they were both vegan. Now, I connected very deeply with the friend she had brought along, and she's now one of my closest friends. She still is. And so we had our own friendships with each other. We each individually had our own friendships with, you know, one another. And then the three of us spent a lot of time together as well. Veganism probably being the strongest thing, the main link that kept me and Penelope together. That was kind of the probably the main thing. I mean, the idea of compassion and just, you know, being a good person in this world and a kind person, that was really the link that kept us together. Now, Penelope had always complained about various digestive and energy issues, even before she became vegan. And over the years, I watched her become seduced and influenced by every food and nutrition philosophy under the sun, trying various fasts and various diets and various regimens. In my opinion, never really staying with anything long enough to really experience the potential benefits, never really eating one way long enough to get a good understanding of what was helping or harming her. Now, completely aside from that, over the last 5 years or more, our relationship had begun to become strained, primarily because of our personality differences and lifestyle differences. Like I said, the thing that had really cemented us was veganism, but we really had and have very different tastes in movies, in literature, in people we hung out with, in how we spent our leisure time, just, you know, extracurricular activities in general. And we just started growing apart over the last 5 years. Our interactions had become tense, our conversations had become less intimate, and I think our fondness for one another had begun to wane. Or at least I'll speak for myself, my fondness had begun to wane after I'd seen some things, you know, whatever, that just happens. So one day, several years ago, she had me over for lunch and told me she was eating chicken's eggs and various forms of cow's milk again, because a nutritionist she was seeing recommended she needed to do so for her digestive issues. She announced this to me while making it very clear that she didn't want to hear my opinion because she felt very strongly about the decision she had made. And I thought to myself, well, if you feel so strongly about it, you'd be able to hear my opinion, but I didn't say that. And it was a very uncomfortable conversation, and we pretty much changed the subject as quickly as possible. She had made it clear that she didn't even want to hear what I had to say, so I was pretty much cut off. So things continued to go downhill, and we weren't really seeing a lot of each other by then anyway. I think we tried a few more times after that, but things didn't go well. We never had that conversation again, but I think our friendship had just petered out, and truth be told, I certainly felt hurt that she didn't trust me enough to allow me to express my opinion that day, but I knew it was more about her own stuff than an affront to me. Nonetheless, things had changed for us by then, and it was just the icing on the cake in terms of our lack of trust and intimacy. Now, I can't quite remember what happened the last time I saw her and if it was a specific event, but I do remember a good year had gone by without having spoken to her or contacting her or hearing from her. A little while after my good friend Michael and my beloved Schuster died last year, exactly a year ago as I write this, I wrote this and it was a year ago. Michael died on July 29th, 2011 and Schuster died 3 days later on August 2nd, 2011. A little while after that, Penelope got in touch with me through Facebook and she expressed her condolences and said she'd love to get together. I appreciated that she had reached out to me, and so we made a date for me to visit her at her new apartment. It was awkward. The breach between us had grown large enough that there wasn't a lot of affection in the air. We were definitely polite and amicable, but it was definitely awkward. So after we had talked a bit about what happened to Michael and the experience of Schuster and what a horrible time all of that was, we talked very briefly about the release of the 30-Day Vegan Challenge. I brought her a copy, and then she proceeded to tell me that she had made what she said was a very difficult but necessary decision, and one that she ultimately felt was the right thing for her. She told me that she had begun to eat animals again. And I'm a pretty darn intuitive person, and I can anticipate most things before they happen, but I must admit I had not expected that. I was a bit floored, and then of course I thought, oh no, that makes sense. This definitely makes sense in terms of what I had seen her do prior. So she went on to explain that she had become so sick that she had gone to the emergency room one night, and then it was a naturopath or a nutritionist or someone she was working with who basically said at that point that she had to eat animal flesh or she would continue to be very ill. So she said that with the support of good friends, she cried and she sobbed and she wept as she ate her first piece of animal flesh in 20 years. And I sat and listened and was silently invoking guidance on how to reply. I kept breathing and just listening. And I suspected she was getting to a point, and she was. She said that she didn't feel like she could tell me this because she didn't want to be judged by me. She was afraid of being judged by me. And this is when I finally spoke, and I reminded her of the time several years before when she told me that she had started eating eggs and dairy again, and then she basically shut down any response I may have had, and I told her I found it unfair that she presumed I would judge her when she hadn't even given me the chance to prove her otherwise. She admitted that was true, but she said she knew what my position was on eating animals, and she insisted that that was her position too, which is why she insisted that she didn't want to eat them, but she felt she had to for her own health. She said that she didn't want to hurt animals and that she got the most humane meat, dairy, and eggs that she could. Of course, everybody says they do that. No one says they get the most cruel products. Everybody has to believe that they get the most humane as if it's even possible. So she obviously has that perception of herself. And then she said that because she still believed what I believed, she said that she still considered herself vegan, just a vegan who eats animals. Now, that may have been the hardest moment for me in this conversation because I'm sorry, but being an animal-eating vegan is like being a slave-holding abolitionist. You can't have it both ways. Being vegan means something. At the very least, being vegan means you don't consume animals and animal secretions. If you do that, you're not vegan. It's that simple in terms of that part of the definition. Now, as you know, for me, being vegan is about manifesting our values. It means we live in alignment with our ethics. Being vegan is about being unconditionally compassionate and having no borders, extending our compassion to everyone, including other beings, including non-vegans. So if I'm saying that being vegan is about being compassionate, and I'm saying that you can't call yourself vegan if you're eating animals, am I also saying that you can't call yourself compassionate if you're eating animals? Well, no, I'm not saying that. I think you can be a kind, compassionate person and eat animals, but I do think we're not being fully compassionate if we're still eating animals. I think we're not reflecting our deepest, truest compassion. I believe there's still a block that keeps a part of our hearts closed, preventing us from manifesting our core values. That's what I believe. For me, that's what being vegan is. It's an opening. It's an awakening. It's a beautiful way to live, and it's an identity that I'm proud to claim. It has a meaning. It has a definition, and I'm proud to wear that badge. But you can't wear that badge, not that badge called vegan, if you're eating animals and their secretions. It reminds me of a question someone asked me in a class once. They said, well, what do you call someone who eats animals then? And I said, oh, an animal eater, right? I mean, I call them someone who eats animals. But I found that really interesting, and I found it really interesting what Penelope was saying, because we want to label things. We want to have a label. We want to have a title for everything. We want to have a name to call something, a compartment to put something in. Things tend to be neat and tidy when you can define someone by the box we put them in. But if we're going to do that, if we're going to label something, I think we at least have to be clear about its definition. Otherwise, it's utterly meaningless. And yes, I do think veganism loses its meaning if people who eat animals and animal secretions call themselves vegan. And yet, Penelope and many other people still want to wear that badge. You've heard me talk about this before, how interesting I find it when people say this sort of thing, when they say, I'm vegetarian, well, I eat chickens and I eat fishes, but I'm vegetarian. Or I'm vegan, but I eat eggs and dairy, but you know, I'm vegan at heart. I think it's interesting because they want to identify as vegetarian. They want to wear that badge called vegan. And I think we need to pay attention to that because they are recognizing that there is honor in wearing that badge, and indeed there is. So when my friend said she's vegan who eats animals, it's because she perceives herself as compassionate. And she is compassionate, but she's not vegan. To call yourself vegan and still eat animals is a denial of reality, and it's a misrepresentation of who you are and what being vegan means. So we don't get to change definitions just because it's convenient. As my husband said, you don't get to have all the fun and none of the responsibility. You can certainly have a perception of yourself, but that doesn't mean it's going to reflect reality. It's like people who identify themselves as environmentalists but who drive SUVs, or people who label themselves as humanitarians but who contribute to slavery, or as I said, slave owners who call themselves abolitionists. Just because you call it something doesn't make it so. You know, George Washington held slaves. He kept slaves. And he was proud of the fact that he didn't break up families when it was possible. And that's the qualifier, right? Because you know what? He did break up families when push came to shove, when it was convenient, when it was deemed necessary to do so. Perhaps he received advice from an expert who said he had to do it this way, that he had no choice, that it was for the very best. And that's what was going on here with Penelope. She was receiving advice from people whose opinion, whose recommendations I didn't agree with. And Penelope was doing something that I didn't agree with. And that's the clincher. That's the whole point of this story. She said that she respected me and honors all the work that I do and knows how strongly I feel about compassion, about veganism, about animal rights. And she said she feels the same way and agrees with my philosophy and respects my philosophy. But she said that that respect can't be one way. She said that she respected me and that I needed to respect her too, all of her, unconditionally, including the fact that she was now eating animals. She essentially said that in order for us to have a friendship, I needed to respect her decision to eat animals. And I sat there and listened, still groping for guidance. I'll tell you a secret. One of the things I do before I speak, before I write, before I do an interview, before I do this podcast is repeat a mantra that is essentially an invocation to put the words in my mouth, the love in my heart, and help me to tell the truth. And I say this all the time. It's a mantra that I say in my head all the time. So as I sat there listening to her, feeling my annoyance rise, I was pretty much repeating this mantra over and over and over, put the words in my mouth, the love in my heart, and help me to tell the truth. And the response in my heart was very clear to me, and it was the response I voiced to her. And I said, you know, when you say you need me to respect the fact that you eat animals, what I hear is that you want me to give you my blessing that you're eating animals, and I don't know that I can do that. And she said, you know, I just need you to trust me. She said, I need you to trust the decision I'm making. She said, I wasn't trusting her, that she was making, you know, an adult, proper, informed decision. And so I thought about that, and I said, no, I don't trust the advice you're getting. I said the nutritionist she was getting advice from was biased toward eating animals, that of course I supported her being well. I wanted her to feel well, but she had the choice to find a vegan nutritionist or even a nutritionist who wouldn't recommend eating animal products and help her find a solution within that context, within the vegan framework. I told her that the advice she was getting was one person's opinion and that I didn't have to agree with it and I didn't have to trust it. And then I asked her the ultimate question, was it helping? Had eating animals solved her problems? And she said, no, not really. But that it was still too soon to tell, and she wanted to give it a try, and that she trusted the people she was getting this advice from. And again, she said that she needed me to respect that and trust that. She needed me to respect the fact that she was eating animals. And so we went back and forth, and, you know, it just became clear to me regarding this word respect. And I started feeling really manipulated. I started feeling that I was being asked to agree to something that we hadn't even defined, right? So basically, I was being told I was wrong or I was intolerant if I didn't concede to her definition of respect. And that's when I realized that people absolutely confuse disrespect with disagreement. And there is indeed a difference between the two. And as I thought about it, I thought, well, what does respecting or disrespecting the fact that someone eats animals even look like? We had some non-vegan friends over for dinner recently, and this very same topic came up. This is when I realized I needed to do this podcast episode. And this topic came up over dinner, and it was a little disconcerting because it was the first dinner in our new home, and I was caught off guard because we've known these people for years, and this is the first time this came up, and it was a little uncomfortable. But I would rather have a dialogue with people than never discuss it at all, and I really appreciated that it was brought up. And somehow the paleo diet came up, which gets even the most reasonable people all out of whack. And the woman of this male-female couple said that I needed to respect the fact that some people eat differently than I do, and that's their choice. And I kind of did my whole, you know, response about choice and personal choice and harm, and you know, said as much. But she said, if people want to eat paleo, then that's their personal choice, and I need to respect that. So respect, again, this word respect kept coming up. And I said, why do I have to respect it? It's a fad diet that uses pseudoscience to support it. I don't have to respect the paleo diet, or if you remember from the previous podcast episode, the pasturbation diet, any more than I have to respect the Atkins diet or the South Beach diet or the cabbage diet. Why do I have to respect it? I don't respect systems that manipulate people, that give people misinformation, and that encourage violence towards animals. Why do I have to respect that? So on one hand, I'm perfectly comfortable being clear that just because something exists doesn't mean I have to respect it. So that's my position there. It's like saying, you know, some people just want to drink and drive and you have to respect that's their choice to do so. Well, no, I don't. It's incredibly irresponsible and there could be dire consequences. And in the case of eating animals, it's an inherently violent system whereby people are desensitized and paid to kill and animals suffer tremendously. There's nothing about any of that that I respect. And then she brought up her grandparents, who raised chickens and had done so because they lived in the country and had no other food to eat but the eggs produced by the hens and the meat from the hens they killed once their production had slowed down for the eggs. And she said, I needed to respect that that's how they did things. So I asked her, how was I disrespecting them? What was I doing in my work, in my life, that was disrespecting her grandparents? I don't judge people for what they did to survive. I don't rail against past generations of people. I don't chastise anyone, including myself, for once having eaten animals. What I'm saying in all my work is that we can do better than we did before, that we don't have to do things the way we once did, that we can look forward to a more healthful and more compassionate future rather than look back and A, romanticize the breeding and killing of animals, and B, act as if because we once did something, we have to keep doing it or that that was the best way to do it. So I asked her, how was I disrespecting her grandparents? And she couldn't answer. And she even went on to say that she would never raise animals because she saw how horrible it was. She saw how hard it was. She saw how violent it was. So when I said, well, then how am I disrespecting your grandparents? She had no answer. And that's what I'm trying to establish here. What does it mean that I have to respect people's choice to eat animals? What does it look like? And what does disrespect look like? And as I said, what I suspect is that what people mean when they say they want me to respect the choice, their choice to eat animals, is that they want me to say it was okay. They want me to say it's okay. They want me to condone it, and I won't. And that's pretty much what I told this friend at dinner, and that's what I told Penelope. Penelope told me she needed me to respect the fact that she's eating animals, and I said, what I hear is that you want me to approve of your decision to start eating animals. You want me to bless your decision so you can feel okay about it. You want me to agree. And I told her that I appreciated her honesty and that I needed to think about everything we had talked about, but I wasn't sure I could give her what she wanted. And in my heart, I knew I couldn't. Now, it wasn't a struggle. It wasn't a dilemma. It was pretty clear as I was sitting there what I was feeling and did think about it as time went on after I left that day. I knew we had drifted apart, and if the condition of reviving this friendship was that I endorsed this decision she made, I was pretty certain that it wasn't worth it to me. Now, the reason I gave you all the details about my friendship with Penelope is because I wanted to create some context. Our friendship had faded out long before she told me she was eating animals again, and I didn't want it to sound like I was unwilling to revive this friendship because she was eating animals. I hope you know me well enough to know that I have a number of non-vegan friends and acquaintances and family members, and I don't cut people off because they're not vegan. That's not what this was about. This was a friendship that had reached its end long before that conversation, and though I was happy that we had talked, I really was. I was glad that there wasn't some unresolved silence between us. I was okay with where the relationship was, and I didn't feel the need to work at having this friendship look the way it once had. Would it have been different? Would I have wanted to revive this friendship if she hadn't told me that? Honestly, I don't think so. Enough had happened between us that I was fine with what the relationship now looked like. Amicable, but nothing serious. And this is something I'm going to talk about in a future episode, that relationships change, and that's okay. I was willing for this one to look differently than it had before. I had no animosity toward her and still have no animosity toward her. And that's where I'd like to be with people. And I hope that they don't have any animosity toward me. But things change and people change and circumstances change, and that's okay. We're still in relationship with people, even when it looks differently on the outside, even when it looks differently than it once did, because, well, that's just the way relationships work. They're not just this physical thing. We still learn from them. We still reflect on them. We still grow from that experience. So it was okay with me that things had changed between us. But what had remained the same for me was my clarity that I'm not okay proactively endorsing violence against animals. And I was 100% confident saying to Penelope that if her definition of respect was me telling her it was okay, then I didn't think I could or would do that. I was also okay telling our friend at dinner that I didn't have to respect that people were doing the paleo diet. I was also confident saying that I wasn't disrespecting her grandparents for what they did 50 years ago, just because I believe that making the most compassionate choices once we know better and can do better is how I live my life and what I teach. My desire to manifest my compassion isn't an affront to anyone else and isn't intended to be. I think it's easier to accuse vegans of being disrespectful than it is to accept that someone disagrees with something that you do that you know is harmful. And it's so much easier to deflect that discomfort and accuse vegans of being disrespectful than it is to accept what you're doing. But just because someone disagrees with you doesn't mean they're disrespecting you. To disagree with someone is to know where you end and another person begins. To disagree is to say, I don't share your viewpoint, or I don't share your opinion. You can disagree with someone respectfully. In fact, it's a phrase I use quite often. I have to respectfully disagree. So you can disagree, but still show respect, right? But I don't think that's what my friend was looking for. I don't think that's what people are saying when they say vegans should respect non-vegans. So you can disagree respectfully. Now, taking this further, I am suggesting that when we do disagree with people, we do so in a way that is respectful. That is what I'm saying. Not only can it be done, it should be done. And I've talked about this a number of times, that we should absolutely walk the line of speaking our truth and doing so with respect and compassion and integrity. We can absolutely disagree while demonstrating respect. So that's what disagreeing with someone looks like, expressing a difference of opinion, not telling them they're wrong or bad or evil. That would be disrespectful. And that's not what I'm saying here. I'm not being disrespectful, even to people who are contributing to violence against animals. And some would say we had a right to be disrespectful to people who are doing that. But I don't, it's so much more complicated than that, that I don't think that we have the right to be disrespectful to anyone, right? And if you don't think I'm sincere about that, then go listen to some of my previous podcast episodes, including the one called How to Talk to a Hunter or Anyone Else with Whom You Disagree. Being disrespectful would mean that I was disparaging someone or being rude or treating them differently somehow. Being disrespectful would mean that I might call them names or insult them, and that's not what I do, and that's not what I advocate. There is indeed a difference between saying, I don't share your viewpoint, and you're an idiot. The former is disagreeing, the latter is disrespectful. There's even a difference between saying, I disagree, and you're wrong. If someone interprets I disagree as meaning you're wrong, or as meaning I disrespect you, or as meaning you're an idiot, there's nothing I can do about that. That's the idea of knowing where we end and another person begins. So I think if we're going to walk that line between speaking our truth and speaking up for the animals and speaking up for compassion, and that line between all of that and being disrespectful, I think if we're going to walk that line, we need to know the difference between the two, and we need to own our voice, and we need to own that confidence that says, I disagree, where we just feel confident and comfortable being able to say, I don't share your viewpoint. It's a powerful communication device. It's powerful, and it really does open up communication rather than shut it down. I do think it's our place to speak up against injustice and to speak up on behalf of truth. I do think we can say, I don't feel comfortable giving my blessing that animals are being hurt and killed. I mean, we don't have to be brutally honest all the time, especially if it would be hurtful to someone. But when it comes to this issue, when it comes to people wanting to feel better about supporting violence towards animals, I'm sorry, but I simply won't be the person who does that. In an upcoming episode, I will talk about the flip side of this, when non-vegans are disrespectful to vegans. And that does come out in very hostile, aggressive, and hurtful ways. I don't advocate anyone being hostile or aggressive or hurtful, but I know vegans have felt that they've been on the receiving end of this, just telling friends and family members and coworkers that they're vegan. So we'll talk about that soon. And if you disagree with anything I've said on this episode, then so be it. This is just my opinion, and I appreciate you being open to it. For the animals, this is Colleen Patrick-Goudreau. Thanks for listening.